Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, and welcome to the Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for insider information and quality gear. Today, we have with us on, I was going to say the phone. It's not really the phone anymore. We stopped using the phone system. We're going to a video app. But we have one of the most recognizable faces and names in the hunting industry, and revered by many as the badass. And that's Remy Warren. How you doing today, Remy?
Yeah, pretty good. How's it going?
Good, really, man. Good. Real good. So you've been busy, man. I always envy you guys that get to do a lot of hunting during the springtime. I don't really do much of anything besides going to call predators in spring and summer. And you've been all over the place.
It's been a really busy spring for me. Been over to Hawaii a couple times, hunting over there, and then obviously New Zealand. And I made a trip over to Australia this year, and that was awesome. That was a lot of fun, just trying to figure some stuff out over there. And yeah. It was a lot of really good deer hunting with good access to it. And then I did some buffalo hunting as well. And that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I followed along a little bit on your Instagram. I saw a lot of the pictures you were posting up about that, and I was like eating my own shorts because I was so envious, man. I really want to go out and do some of that. Unfortunately, my pact with my wife is fall and winter, I hunt hard, and I'm gone a lot. And then summer and spring, I'm here. So, but
some of those pictures of some more of the Australia stuff up pretty soon because I've been out of service for like about 2 months. So I try to just, post pictures. As soon as I get service, there'll be a bunch of pictures, and then there'll be nothing right. 2 weeks or whatever. And then I did some spring bear guiding in Montana as well. And we had a decent season up there. It was a little, just kind of a weird year this year. I thought it would be a lot better than it was, but we ended up doing it right. It was good.
Cool. I actually might get to do a little bear hunting this weekend. I might go up this, still a couple of over-the-counter units open here that I might go try to poke. I think it's open till July 31st or something like that. They haven't met their quota yet. I don't know how successful of a hunt it's going to be, but I might get out for 2-3 days with a buddy of mine. He's actually leaving today to go up, but I'll probably head up on Friday or something. I'm excited about that. Last time I had you on was back in October, I think, last year. And we talked a lot about mule deer. We touched a little bit on elk hunting. But I keep getting a lot of questions about elk hunting, and I know you guided elk for a long time and had a lot of success in different terrain and different seasons, not just the rut. A lot of the guys that I know that are super successful elk hunters just hunt the rut. And of course, not everybody just hunts the rut. You get whatever tag you get and you go when you got to go. So, I think we're going to touch a little bit on that, about that, if that's cool with you. I'm going to start off with the late season. So, you know, how do you, in those times of year, what do you, I mean, what's your starting point? What do you like start to think about where you're going to go looking for elk? You know, in somebody's maybe like late rifle or even late archery hunts, where, you know, calling tactics don't necessarily apply. You know, rut's pretty much over at this point. They might even be batchered up. Where do you start?
Yeah, it just depends on, first off, like what the late season is. You know, because I mean, you've got every state's a little bit different. You've got some October seasons, which, you know, those I would hunt a little bit different than I would say November or even end of November.
Right.
But either way, like generally it's pretty much a glassing game at that point. Mm-hmm. So I try to kind of figure out what they're looking for. Most of the late season hunts, the food source is the key, food and cover too. Earlier, like on the trailing edge of the rut, you know, they're looking more for security, rest, and everything in like a small condensed area. Mm-hmm. Later in the season, it's a little bit different depending on the areas. You might have migration area. You know, you might have winter range. You might be in a unit that has neither of those, then you're just looking in the wrong place. Right. So like what I like to do, the first step is to kind of pinpoint when am I hunting and what type of unit it is. You know, is it an area where elk migrate into? So doing a little research on the herd itself, like, is it late November and is this an area where elk will migrate into, or is it an area that elk are migrating out of? Mm-hmm. Either way, you know, you might have to play it a little bit differently. There's some areas that I hunt that, you know, in that early October or late October, early November.
No problem. Got a phone call.
Yeah, it's just popping up. So anyways, in the, in like that, we'll call it like early November. Some areas that I hunt are areas that elk are migrating out of. So what I'll do is I'll find, there's still going to be elk that hold tight until they have to leave. And you're still looking for that food and cover. And I try generally when I first get into an area, preview it, like go to as many places I can and find the best vantage points, the best glassing spots. Mm-hmm. And then I like to just cover a lot of the area with my glass, just pick a spot, sit down, binos, spotting scope, binos on a tripod, whatever, like really covering the area with my eyes, trying to figure out where the elk are hanging out. And then, you know, if I know it's a migration area, well, I'm going to kind of look at, okay, where might these elk be coming from and where mm-hmm. might they be going? Because that time of year, it's kind of a different herd dynamic. They're bachelored up again, they're grouped up again, and they're still concentrated on food sources. So big open meadows, big burns, anything, those south-facing exposures that are going to be blown, or even like the tops or ridges that might be above a lot of snow, but the wind will blow them clear and they can get food. Those are places that I'm going to be looking for real late season. And, you know, just follow the food and you generally will find the elk because, you know, they're recuperating, they're building up their strength for winter. And the food source seems to be like the most consistent place where you're going to find elk. Now, there might be a lot of food sources that will, so you just got to use your, you know, a lot of time to build strength, last, and get away from the mountain a little bit and try to pick it apart.
Right. So basically what I'm hearing is you identify what the needs are of the elk at that time. and basically look for those needs or the majority of those needs in areas, and those typically where the elk will be
Yeah, exactly.
in a nutshell. So let's kind of break that down real quick. Just post rut, you started saying, or they're telling their rut where it's trickling off, where they might still be with some cows and whatnot. You said they're kind of looking for security. They've been hunted a little bit, at this point, and they're kind of looking for everything. And then the next phase is what I would call, no rutting activity at all. Rut's over, completely post rut. What are those? What are the elk looking for then? Are they just
Yeah,
looking to
so okay,
get?
so like the once the rut's over, what'll happen is the bulls will break off from the cows and they're essentially seeking solitude. They go and this time of year you'll generally find bulls by themselves or in a small group, two, three at the most. And what they do is they branch off from the cows, they go into the deep, thick timber where it's just the odds of them getting pressured are really low. So they'll go into really thick cover, where there is a food source nearby, but they generally don't travel long distances. So they won't be bedding way over here and then walking a mile down to this field and then going back up. Like the real big bulls, generally they go off, they pick a small pocket, and just stay there until they've recuperated.
Right.
And
They're trying to
generally,
conserve energy at that point. So.
conserve energy. And generally, it's like a higher elevation spot. There's spots that are a ways from a road, hard to glass, actually really hard to hunt, and that's why they go to those places. That's like immediately after the rut, and it'll be somewhere where they can get food within that area of cover. So I've seen like a meadow that's maybe 100 yards wide or something like that in a patch of just pure timber. And that elk will essentially hang out in those little benches there and then go to that one patch and feed and kind of browse in the timber and then, go back and not really move a whole lot. What you can do is like look on topo maps, because generally what they'll do is they'll sit on a ridge line. So as the mountain like makes a main ridge, they'll get these finger ridges coming off, and you can't necessarily always see them because you'll have timber and cover. But on the topo, you'll be able to see it. And they like to sit on those ridge lines because they get wind from multiple directions and they have multiple escape routes. And you'll see, like when you go in there, what I'll do is I'll look on the map, I'll find those ridge lines, and I'll try to find a spot that has some kind of opening. Because as elk are grazers, they like that grass and they get a lot, they can build up their strength a lot faster. They'll browse in the little bit of grass that's in the timber, but if it's real thick timber, they need a few openings and they'll be hitting that one area a little bit more. So it could be like up by timberline, right where the timberline is, they'll pop out above the timberline and feed, or like some little meadows or openings on ridges, they'll look for stuff like that, or even like right at the top of the ridge, and then they'll be bedded down below in the timber. So I find those areas, and then a lot of it will just be like looking for sign in the timber, like walking down the ridge, still hunting, moving really slow. And just I even use my binos, even if you can only see 20 yards, use your binos because you'll pick up a tip of an antler or a leg or something that's just out of place, and then look for where I find, elk sign clustered. Just together, obviously, from a bull. And you'll see it in like you'll see bedding in multiple areas and go, okay. And then just a lot of times, I might even just go post up on that open meadow in the mornings and the evenings. I had a lot of success doing that when I was guiding in New Mexico. It was just bad time. And I just find those little tiny meadows, those little pockets, because it was just thick timber, nearly impossible to hunt. And we'd still hunt in the middle of the day and then, sit those spots morning and evening and have a lot of success. You see, that time of year, you see the fewest amount of elk. It's the hardest time to hunt elk, especially if you're looking for big bulls. Now, there will always be those, like groups of cows and small bulls that are still hanging where they were, like I call them resident elk. that were there during the rut. So you're just looking to kill an elk and you have a later tag, go scout during the rut and where those groups of cows and bulls are, you can go back there and you'll probably pick up a few bulls on those cows mm-hmm. for the rest of the year. But if you're looking for those real big bulls, they'll be off on their own in those little pockets. And that can be some of the toughest hunting, but you know, there's not a lot of pressure. And when you do find your bull living, you'll generally kill him because he's not going too far.
Right.
You know, especially if you're patient, it might take you 4 or 5 days, but once you figure out where he's at, you can be pretty successful, or you'll even find those spots. And then year after year, bulls will keep you in those little spots because they're
still right.
Yeah,
I found that. So my late season experience is only here in Arizona. I've never gone out of state for late rifle or late anything elk. I've had the late archery season here a few times, and the late archery season here, even though it's in November and late November, the bulls are still with the cows. It's like literally when that season ends and the rifle season starts, that's when I started noticing that where the bulls would break off, you know, like into December, basically the bulls would break off. They'd be on in bachelor groups or be solitary, you know, off by themselves up high, like you said. You know, I think Arizona, and you mentioned New Mexico, and I would imagine New Mexico in most places about the same as Arizona, that because it's our winters are so mild, they're probably not moving very much as far as from one range to another. I know the only place that I've ever seen it here is on San Francisco Peaks, because you know that it goes up to 13,000 or whatever, 12,000. So those bulls don't, you know, they're not up really, really high in the snow. They'll stay below snow line or, you know, down low, but you don't see much migration here. So what I've always told people was, the one good thing about finding out, we found out early here when we're going elk hunting, they changed that several years back where the draw results come out, you know, right in the beginning of the year. You know, you find out whatever time it was, it in February or whatever. I'm like, go out and scout now, because that's where those bulls are going to be. If you got that real late rifle hunt, they're still going to kind of be in those areas, because we're still typically in the high country in the winter type, you know, weather. Or you could go look for just, you know, sign and whatnot. Is that applicable other places? Like, you know, if you know you're going to go late season elk hunting, is it good to go like right then and there in the spring or whatever to find, you know, find your spots like after the seasons are over?
Yeah, it just depends on the areas. Because, I mean, there's one area that I hunt and the elk rut in a certain place in the area and then they kind of disband. Mm-hmm. And they actually, what I found is a lot of elk go back to where they were during the summer before the rut. So it's like, a lot of times, if you have trouble, if you're out scouting and you like hear elk everywhere and you're seeing elk everywhere, and then you go back later in the rifle season and there's no elk there, because like even if you don't have a tag during the rut, that's the best time to kind of be out and try to find stuff. But a lot of areas, they might not rut in the same places that they live. And so sometimes that summer range is where they go back to, because that's mostly like where the highest protein is and the best grass and the best feed. And if it's an area that's not going to get wintered out, then they're probably going to go back there, because that's where your highest concentration, your highest populations can live there for the longest amount of time. But it just, I mean, and then there's just area variability where, you know, they just go to certain places in the area, and, you know, it just depends. Like, I guess in the Southwest, when the temperature's mild and they don't migrate, then you just hunt them like resident elk. You just scout when you can scout. And there are certain elk in every unit that, unless they get snowed out or whatever, will be there just doing their thing 365 days a year. You know, and those are just, you know, those are just those resident elk. So once you find elk like that, you know, you're pretty set. But those elk, now if it's an area that gets hunted a lot, everybody knows where those elk are, and then they just get disbanded and shot, and and it's just, you know, so I try to kind of avoid those elk if I can,
Right.
because it's like pretty tempting sometimes. Oh yeah, I'll go after those elk, and then you get the, you know, you plan on it, you watch them, and you've wasted your time watching elk that everyone else can watch that are gonna be there, but you know, then
Yeah.
you've got no other options once that opening day comes around because everybody and their brother's after them.
Oh yeah, for
So
sure. You're breaking up really bad now. You were good for a while, but that whole scent, did you? Yeah, now I hear you. It's just, you sound like you were on in a tunnel underwater or something.
yeah, but I mean, once that, you know, right after opening day, sometimes it was easy to find elk. Just, I mean, it, your hunt's over
Yeah.
immediately. You gotta go to something else. So it's always nice to know where those elk are, but always nice to kind of have some backup plans and know, all right, when there's pressure, this, that, and the other thing, where are these elk living? And especially in those hard times of year before late season, like before it gets, you know, that in that area that I'm talking about where it's after the rut and the bulls are recuperating, you know those pockets where that one bull lives and he's just gonna live there until he's recuperated and then moves back with the groups later on. So, you know, finding those little tiny pockets like that, that's pretty key to being successful, especially on good bulls. In areas that get hunted hard because they've found the places that they're safe year after year after year after the rut. And once you find where those little places are, you're pretty set.
Yeah. Well, you started mentioning that about them going back to where they were summering. My next question was going to be geared towards those pre-rut hunts, those really early season archery hunts. Matter of fact, I have one of those this year. I got drawn in Utah, and I'm going to be hunting in August. So I'd like to know what it is that you're looking for. What are some of the tactics you employ during that time of year, to improve your success?
Yeah, I
So.
mean that's also a really hard time, especially for bow hunting, because most of the time those are in areas where it's, you know, they're pretty good areas and you're looking for a really good bull. I mean, you can always set up on water holes if it's a dry type area. I mean, that can be pretty boring as well though. But yeah, I mean, water hole hunt, like if they aren't active at all, but they'll still be going to the water generally because it's like those August seasons that they'll be hitting the water pretty good. But that time of year, you know, I kind of focus on where are they watering and then where are they going in between that. And most of the time just try to ambush them or stalk them when they bed. A lot of the bigger bulls haven't even grouped up with the cows yet, so they're like constantly cruising that time of year, which makes it fairly difficult to pin one down. So I kind of go back to that, just a lot of glassing, try to bed them up and then stalk in. But I'm not afraid to call like before sunup and try to get a bull going because they will still be, I mean, you know, it could be the easiest time to call in a big bull as well. I found like early in the season before the rut happens, you get those bigger bulls that they hear like a lot of activity and then they get like really fired up, and then you just call them. Once they've got their cows, it's really tough to do. So I've actually called in a lot of really good bulls just by being extremely aggressive in those times that people are like, "Don't be aggressive with your calls," and then they just screaming in. But because it generally heats up so fast, I mean, I'll start calling, like especially early season, but I do it throughout the rut. But like, I'll start calling an hour before light just to try to locate them, you know, every off like bugle. I mean, when I call, I generally just bugle. And then once I get one to respond, like I keep them just interested enough. And then that little bit right before shooting time, like I pretty much rush in and get within that 100, 200 yards of where he's calling from. And then, but you know, try to stay quiet because I don't want him to come in too early. And then I start, as soon as it's like usual time to shoot, start calling again, and generally I'll have them in within the first 15 minutes of light.
Yeah. I actually got a funny story about that in Colorado. So I do that a lot myself. Matter of fact, I'll even go out two, three hours and just run roads and let out bugles and, you know, see if I can find at least find a direction. And then I'll close the distance in the dark and kind of hang out, you know, a couple hundred yards away from them. But in Colorado a couple years ago, I think it was 2014 or 2013, 14. You know, they wouldn't, as soon as it got light, they would shut up. They wouldn't bugle, but in the dark, they were bugling like crazy. And I'm assuming that's just because of hunting pressure. And they knew that once the light came up, they humans were bugling at them. But, so yeah, I started going out earlier and earlier and I would, you know, bugle, find a bugle, close the distance. And we called in this good bull. I needed literally like 5 more minutes of light. Actually, I could shoot him. I could hit him with the bow. I could, my pins were glowing enough that I can see him. And it was only 18 yards. I mean, hell, I could have shot down the shaft of the arrow and killed him. I would have been. But the camera couldn't see him yet. So I let him go thinking that, you know, in about 7, 8 minutes, I'd be able to just call him back or whatever. But yeah, he never came back in. But yeah, that was one of those things where we cut the distance in the dark. I was just using my little red headlamp and, you know, trucking through the woods to kind of get close to them. I was hoping to stay like, you know, a couple hundred yards away from them. But I think maybe he might have heard us coming through, and that added to him thinking it was cows or, you know, another bull or whatever. And that made him come in faster than I anticipated. So, but yeah, no, that's definitely a good tactic. I've heard other people tell me too, you know, don't be afraid to call in the early season. And where it became a reality for me was I went with my cousin Anthony actually drew an Arizona tag 6B, and we went in early August, like, I mean, probably still right after or just before they shed their velvet. We got out, and just for fun, I let out a bugle just for, you know, whatever, we were scouting, and this bull answers back, and I'm like, oh, crazy. So went in, he got fired up and he literally rubbed his velvet off in front of us. He was beating the crap out of a tree and just bugling and going nuts. And this was like, you know, very beginning part of August. So I'm like, ah, oh, you know, there's some truth, because they're anticipating. You know, it's just like us humans, man. We're getting ready to go to the bar or whatever and pick up some chicks. You know, your boys get amped up and everybody's, you know, getting rowdy or whatever when you're a teenager or you're in 20s or whatever. And, you know, same thing for them. They're anticipating or, you know, getting ready for a football game or whatever it is. You know, they're excited. That's their excitement for the year right there. The rest of the year is spent surviving, you know, that's their Super Bowl every year right there. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I call all season whenever I'm elk hunting. I mean, I'm calling, and even earlier, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But I mean, think about those times you go out like fishing in the high country in the middle of summer and you hear bugles almost every morning. I've got videos of bulls in full velvet in July, you know, bugling. So, they definitely respond to it, and I wouldn't shy away from it for sure. It'd be one of my main tactics, even early. But you know, you can also, there's a lot. It just depends on the year too, you know. But it's always worth a shot.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely going to bring the bugle and bring some calls with me on that trip. I mean, I plan on hunting them like deer mostly. I like to hunt them that way anyway, just because, you know, it's funny when I'm at home and stuff like that, I have no problem making calls and making the right sounds and whatever. But like when I'm out in the field, like I feel like sometimes I fumble on myself, and I don't know that it's scaring elk or, you know, deterring elk from coming in, but in my head it's kind of like a deterrent for me to call very much. I try not to call that much at all, to be honest with you. You know, if I could slip in them on them, like, and treat them like a mule deer, or whatever, a whitetail, I'll do that. But yeah, I don't call myself an expert elk caller. Hell, in the last several years, I've been using my Fox Pro a lot, actually, in Arizona, because it's legal to use it here, and it works awesome. And you don't need to have somebody calling for you. You can put it behind you or whatever, off to the side. So it works out real good. But you know, going to other states, obviously, that's not something you can use.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, though, I think a lot of people, like, they'll call and they think, like, oh, the elk are, I scared him away. But it may not be that the elk thinks you're a human, it just thinks you're an elk. Because when two elk are caught, like, I think we have in our minds that, like, when an elk calls, then an elk always calls back and then they meet up. Like, that's generally not the case, whether you're there or not. When elk are bugling toward each other, it's like half the time they think, ah, I'll just get out of here, or I'll just round up my cows. And a lot of times what I do if they're going, I just keep following and following and following them. Sometimes I'll follow them for 6 miles, and then all of a sudden they turn around and come right in, you know, and just be persistent, like dog them enough to where they are like, okay, now I have no more options but to just go back and fight or go back and investigate. And that happens a lot.
Yeah, I experienced that actually on my 2014. I had a drew a bull tag here. And we were just chasing this bull. Like every day, I felt like we were behind them always. And we just kept following the circle, following the circle. They kept doing this big circle. And we every morning we try to get there earlier and get in front of them. And every morning they would be just ahead of us. And it was like, and finally, I'm just like, listen, let's just keep going at him, going at him, going at him. And just like you said, eventually he just said, screw it, this guy's not giving up. And he turned around and he came back at me. I didn't end up getting a shot because of trees in the way and stuff, but it definitely worked. I think during the elk or during the rut rather, elk are very it's productive to be very aggressive. I never used to be aggressive with I'm even in any of my hunting, but I've gotten a lot more aggressive in the last like 5 6 years. I'm kind of a just go 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 go, and I found like that's kind of worked out better for me. Some guys are really good about being patient, and even with their stalks and stuff. Like I'm an aggressive stalker. I'm not a very sneaky guy, but I found that just you know sometimes barreling in works too, you know. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you waste so much time that you allow the wind and everything to just mess you up. You're better off just going and getting where you need to be and making it happen.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, for sure. So a question that I get all the time is, so guys have a hard time looking at like Google Earth or aerial maps and stuff like that and actually deciphering, because they always hear us talking about, oh, you know, find this and find that and find this. And I should have prepped you for this in the beginning. We could have actually shared a screen of Google Earth and been able to look at it. I mean, I might be able to pull it up here myself and do it, but
pull up the maps and I'll just point the spots that I think look good.
yeah. All right. Well, let's try that real quick. Let me pull up Google Earth here. But while I'm pulling this up, give me a list of like your top five, top six things that you look for. You know, in terrain for
Yeah, I mean, I like to read topo maps. Like, it's just easier for me. I like to like look at the contour first. And then I just like, depending on the area, once I've found animals in a certain place, I kind of know what they like. But I mean, elk, I like to look for a main ridge that has finger ridges coming off. And just depends on which way the wind generally goes in that area. You know, but they like to kind of bed on those finger ridges. And I look for like what I call a bowl, like a bowl shape, because it's got more gradual country and is generally like if it's south facing, it probably has on some of those sides at least has meadows and feed and everything like that. So I try to look for something that has food, water, shelter, kind of all right in that area. But I call them pocket. It literally looks like a pocket. Especially for deer, elk, I look for those same pockets. But I also, for elk, I look for like south facing, like big south facing hills that have multiple ridges coming down. Those generally tend to hold a lot of animals. Like where the main ridge runs east west, so you've got a big south face on it, but then there's ridges coming off that hold animals as well. It depends where you're at too. I mean, that's good for like Idaho. Oops.
Okay, so this is actually my unit in Utah. Okay, so I'm gonna use you here to Cyber Scout for me. So this is kind of one of those units that kind of are one of those ridges that runs north south. So you got a lot of this. Or you were just saying east west, right?
Well,
So
north
okay.
south is good too, you know what I
This is
mean?
north south. This is well, I guess this was kind of east westish. So this because this is north up here. Obviously there's some large bodies of water here. Looks like to me like there's a lot of, open areas for them to feed on and a lot of thick cover for them to escape to bed. Some benchy stuff right here.
Can you
Actually,
get in like a topo?
you know what? This is on Google Earth. If I use a different program, I could. If I jump on X Maps or something, I could do that. I'm trying to think here how I can do that. That's kind of cool. There's actually a little water hole on that bench right there. You have to keep that in mind. Just found that. Let me see if I could pull it up on X Maps. This would be kind of cool here. I think it'll help guys out if we can help them decipher this stuff. Because I actually want to do a whole podcast on reading maps and using maps and stuff like that as a come on. Sorry. I can't do two things at once here. Jesus, man. Sorry. That was my bad. I hit X out of it. I try to get it unminimized and I X'd out of it. So sorry guys. I really tried to get you to be able to see it all. Maybe I just might go back and do some editing and I'll have Remy explain it right now and then I'll try to find those things within the map and overlay his voice over it or something like that if it's easy enough to do. So all right, so go ahead. What are some of these things you're looking at a map? What do you when you're looking at a map, what are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for basins, pockets, the topo lines that make that kind of curved shape. It looks like a little basin or pocket. I generally find a lot of elk in those areas. And then also those areas where you'll see, they've got a southern exposure, they've got the grass in the open, they've got cover and probably some water nearby, whether stream or water holes or whatever. I look for that. I also look for places like if you're using, I don't really Google Earth a lot, but I have on a few occasions and kind of gone to prominent points and seen, okay, can I actually glass from this point? Will I see anything?
Right.
But most of the time I just pull up like a paper topo map, look for the type of contours I'm looking for, and then go there in the unit.
Done for.
Although, yeah, it just depends on where I'm going and how much time I've got. Every once in a while, so I'll fly around a little bit on Google Earth, but try not to use it too much. I just like to look at the topo map and say like, all right, this is a good spot. And then once I get in the area, I kind of preview it and say, okay, I know what the ground is. And generally, based on the topo lines, you can kind of read, okay, what it's going to look like, based on how steep it is, how much it's oriented, whether
Yeah,
there's
you can do that because you've had experience. So
but I need
I
to start
think that's
thinking
where
long.
Google Earth comes in though. You can look, I think it's good to look at a topo map, try to find some of those things you're talking about, like some of those bowls or pockets, and then taking that and going to Google Earth and looking to see what the vegetation's like right there. And then that'll at all.
that step will kind of start going away because you'll be able to start recognizing it, like you said, just from a topo or.
What I'll do a lot is actually just use the Google Maps because you can switch back and forth
Right.
simultaneously between topo and aerial views.
Yeah.
That works. And you can do it on the Onyx Maps as well. We just couldn't get it going on the thing. But yeah, that kind of where I can just switch back and forth, simultaneously. So I can be looking, okay, there's a contour, then switch back to the aerial view and kind of see, okay, and then I'll cruise around that aerial view based on what I find on the topo lines. But first off, I look for those basins, and then I look for those ridges that run with the, finger ridges coming off. So like a main ridge, I call it like a main ridge that runs one direction with finger ridges coming off those other ridges. Sometimes it'll be
Right.
like a main ridge, another main ridge that comes down, and then ridges on each side.
Right.
But the elk, like especially elk as a herd animal, they like to position themselves in those places, like in steeper type country where, as far as like I'm talking like Montana, Idaho, Colorado, northern New Mexico, places like that. Those are kind of the things I look for in those areas. If I'm like more central Nevada or even possibly Arizona, I'd probably look for a little bit different, more because they tend to like more of those bench, like a bench within like that hillside, and then multiple benches. But kind of the same deal in those canyons. I look for the canyons that, might have that good vegetation, good feed, and then good cover, not too rocky. They can hold a lot of animals. That's generally what I'm looking for when I'm looking at the maps or looking at a new area.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, cool, man. I mean, I think that's all I got for you as far as as far as questions. I think we covered a lot, giving some guys some good information on how they can start applying that to their hunting skill set. I'm sure you got a lot of awesome hunts coming up this year, but any of them in particular are super excited about?
I drew a caribou tag, like a pretty decent caribou tag in Alaska this year, so I'm excited about that. It'll be fun to hunt that unit. I've been in the area but never drawn a tag, so it'll be cool to have the tag this time and not just be the observer.
Right.
And no, I actually, outside of that, I pretty much pulled up goose eggs everywhere. I've got as many as 18 points and a lot of states and
Oof.
nothing.
Jeez.
I don't even put, I put in for like all archery hunts and nothing real crazy, but no, yeah, the points game, I've just got a lot. I'm collecting bonus points everywhere, it sounds, seems like, for years.
Yeah.
One day I'll draw too many tags.
Well,
But
that's
they're nice.
happened.
I've got a lot of good general hunts. I'll be hunting Montana and in the general area, and mule deer there, elk there, and then Alaska. I drew three tags in Alaska actually, or I've got three hunts planned up there, so I've got plenty of hunting to do.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I got a pretty full season.
Yeah, I drew two elk hunts. I drew Wyoming and Utah. That's another reason why I decided to go in the early season in Utah in August, because it's a unit that I can glass, and I've hunted deer in there before and seen elk at around that same time. So, and the unit that I drew in the Bighorns in Wyoming, it's not very glassable at all. And if they're not bugling, it's going to be a tough hunt. So I scheduled that one for the peak of, or the peak of the rut, whatever. We never really know when that's going to be, but typically when the rut kicks in, and towards the later end of September, then I decided to do the Utah hunt in August because of that. But other
Yeah.
than that, I mean, I also drew a Utah deer tag, same unit. So I'm going to hunt them simultaneously.
That'll be fun. Cool.
Yeah. And Wyoming, the same thing. I'm pretty sure. Well, the results haven't come out yet, but I'm almost guarantee I'll draw that general deer tag in that same area. So other than that, it's a lot of over-the-counter stuff this year.
Very like, cool. Yeah,
I've had a good run the last 3 years. I kind of hit my – I was, you know, high in points in a lot of places and picked up a lot of tags. And actually, Wyoming and Utah were my last two where I had, like, you know, a decent amount of points. Wyoming wasn't that many. I only had seven. But I think Wyoming, I was at 10 or 11 or something like that. I was just below the point creep. I was actually pretty lucky to draw it.
Yeah, that's cool. No, that's good. Good deal. So.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on. Sorry about all the technical difficulties. I wish we could have been able to show these guys stuff on the maps. But it's always fun to have you on. You're a wealth of knowledge and easy to talk to and well-spoken. So,
thanks. Appreciate it. Next time we'll just pull the maps up. We'll have some maps ready or something. We can go over them.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully you'll have some good stories about killing caribou for us. So, all right, man. Well, thanks a lot, and enjoy the rest of your season. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks.
Have a good one.